I was fortunate to play at a very good basketball school. And then you go away and you coach and you think that, you know, if I ever had the chance to coach here at Maryland, it'd be great. But I never thought I'd have the opportunity to come back and coach at Maryland.
Trimble with 3 seconds. Trimble for the win! Cowabunga!
A sellout crowd of 43,000 cheers Queen Elizabeth and her consort Prince Philip. Very special guests of the University of Maryland.
90 seconds to go. Vasquez for three in the lead. 78-77 Maryland.
I believe that the Terrapin is the loveliest, perhaps the most beautiful of all trees.
There's Wells to jump out, make the depth, and slam it. Yikes. Brown will take it inside the five. Touchdown, Maryland. Terrapins beat Virginia Tech.
And no handshake for the coin toss from Maryland before the game today. It is on.
Okay, grab shell, dude.
Ha-ha! Righteous! Righteous!
And breaking free for the touchdown is Jay Sean Jones on his first touch as a Terp.
You're listening to Inside Maryland Sports Radio.
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going? So, you've not had the pleasure of hearing the dulcet tones of our voices in this podcast program in a couple weeks because, well, Jeff and I decided to get super sick in the past week and a half and basically not be able to talk long enough to give you any of our insight and information. And we couldn't get anybody to host in our absence, so here we are, which is great, Jeff, because absolutely nothing has changed since the Windsor, Michigan State, Northwestern, right?
Yeah, they've stayed red hot. They wrapped up the Big Ten title a week and a half ago, looking at a number one seed in the tournament. So, you know, everything's pretty much headed in the same direction as last time we recorded.
Yeah, time is a flat circle, man. Just, you know, take a couple weeks off, close your eyes, you know, do your thing, turn back around, and everything is exactly where it was before. Maryland is cruising. Or not doing that. In fact, Maryland, after being up three games in a loss column with five to go, has lost three games and needed a Darryl Marcillo miracle to keep it from being four losses. And here we sit in the midst of another Turgeon late season collapse with one game left. Senior day at Michigan, or on Sunday at noon for a share of the Big Ten regular season title and a reprieve from what's been a pretty miserable ending to another Maryland basketball season after so much hope and success through most of February. On that happy note, you were listening to IMS Radio, and today we have with us the publisher of InsideMarylandSports.com, Jeff Ehrman, football and football recruiting reporter Edmed Gaffier, and as always, I am your very sniffly and sick-sounding host, Paul Douglas. Just to recap that which has occurred in the basketball season, Maryland lost to Ohio State at Ohio State 79-72. They were able to beat Minnesota at Minnesota 74-73 after Morsell's NBA 3 at the last second. Michigan State beat Maryland at home after an excellent College Day game day crowd. And what would have been a really great game day crowd if they had anything to root for? 78-66. And Rutgers basically boat raced Maryland at the rack on Wednesday night. 78-67 in a score that's much closer than the actual game was. Jeff... this has been coming. As we mentioned in our last pod, Maryland hasn't been playing all that great despite the wins in February. If you kind of peel back that top layer, poor efforts at home against Rutgers, Nebraska, Northwestern. Wins on the road, they were down double digits and required big comebacks in each of them. Defensive efficiency and other stats have been really poor the last couple weeks. Cowan's struggling. Ayala looks like he's never played basketball before. Wiggins can't get a shot to drop. Just... this has been coming. I feel like if you wanted to look for it, I think we kind of alluded to that during the last podcast, but you know, nobody wants to rain on the parade. I mean, it's fun winning basketball games, but these signs have been here for a little while and they've really come to roost now.
Yeah. They've been living dangerously and it's caught up with them, you know, all season. It's not sustainable what they're doing, coming back, hitting those big holes. I'm sure after kept working time and time again, like anybody, you know, it's going to be hard to change your behavior and maybe get ahead of those big deficits until you actually get bit by it. But you know, it's the biggest thing to me, aside from falling into the, because that's just baked in at this point, going down in the first half, having those double-digit deficits. That's just part of who they are at this point. You know, maybe it changes in the postseason, but, you know, I wouldn't, you can't bet on that. But the biggest thing is their defense, you know, giving up 76.5 points a game the past four games. Before that, I think they were allowing like 64-ish or so a game in Big Ten play. So to me, you know, people never want to hear it. I think they're fatigued. People reflexively fight that idea because they feel like it's an excuse for Mark Turgeon, which, you know, I don't think it is an excuse because he's the GM. If they only have six guys who can be good enough to be in the rotation, then that's on him. So it's not an excuse, but I think it could be a reason, you know, because you just don't, when you're that good of a defensive team and you put that much effort into defense all season, you just don't stop trying to play defense in the last few games. You don't just, you know, forget how to do it. It's not like shooting where you can have a slump. I mean, you can't have a defensive slump, but it's less, you know, it's more attributed to effort and energy. So I think that they're tired. That stretch of four games and 9 or 10 games was pretty rough. The Michigan State game, you know, that you can't blame that on fatigue. That's when they just came out flat. Michigan's Izzo had his guys whipped into a frenzy. You could tell as soon as they came out that they were going to be on point for 40 minutes, and Maryland never, you know, that sadly, when you have game day there, it's the livest big event feel at Xfinity in years. And you don't, not only do you lose, but there's really never a point in the game where it seems like you're about to make a run to take the lead. That's pretty tough to take, I'm sure, for the fans. And so now you got one game left. You know, I feel like the setup is good for them with Michigan. They have plenty of rest. It's at home where they've lost one game all year. It's Anthony Cowan's senior day. Michigan is good. They're a good team. They're not a great team. You know, I felt like they would lose at Rutgers, so I'm not just, you know, handing them the wins just because. But that was a bad setup. So much of it with college is just the situation that you're in. If they lose that one, though, then that's a really bad sign. If they go into that with all the rest they've had, all the reason they have to win to clinch the Big Ten title, Cowan senior day at home, if they lose that one, then that, to me, is a really bad sign heading into the postseason.
Yeah, you have two very distinct narratives here that are kind of fighting each other, depending on your perspective, right? If you took these losses, these last, you know, starting from Ohio State, if you sprinkle them through, instead of having a 9-game winning streak, you just sprinkle these losses through the season, or these games through the season, Minnesota too, you're not totally upset about how that final result comes out, right? That you're not totally upset about getting to, no, you know, what are they, 20, you know, 23-7 via that route, okay? But given Turgeon's annual struggles in February and March, when you see a team that's literally got the conference kind of the conference title, like the first banner that Maryland be able to hang in
such a tease.
Yeah. And years just laid out there. You've got the guy, you literally got the guys with the Big Ten trophy has been following them around since the Michigan State game, waiting to give them this trophy. And they just keep losing. I mean, if you're not a Turgeon fan, or if you're neutral about Turgeon and you just continue to expect Maryland to fold every February and March, you're watching that happen again. And it's just infuriating and you don't know what to do with yourself. So, you know, part of what we said on this podcast for forever is like I'm open to Turgeon proving me wrong and convince me that we can do things differently, like the fact that they had pulled off that nine game winning streak up and through most of February, like that was a new thing. It looked like this team was going to stay hot and was going to win games leading up to what could, you know, be a team that could make a real run in March. And then this happens, and it's like, oh shit, here we go again. And it just makes you wonder whether they're just going to do the same thing. And if they do, boy, I don't know. This would hurt more than I think any of the other ones.
Oh, easily, because expectations are a bitch. You know, if you don't have any expectations, you can get frustrated, but you're not going to get your heart broken. And what you said was absolutely true. If you split up those three losses they took right now, and you put them, you know, throughout the season, then people are happy to be in the race and have a chance to tie for the title with one game left. But when you have a chance to wrap it up, according to ESPN's got its little BPI formula. According to that, it was like a 90% chance, I think, that they'd win the Big Ten as of a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was before this slump started. So to have that was such a rarity at Maryland to be able to hang a banner, which it shouldn't be, but that's a whole different story. And have it all wrapped up, and now just possibly, I mean, even if you get the shared championship, which in the Big Ten, you know, I'm using air quotes as I say this, but there's no such thing as a shared championship. It's just considered that you won the championship. But, you know, everybody knows you didn't win it outright. You might not get the number one seed in the conference tournament. So it doesn't feel the same after you had it pretty much on a silver platter. But, you know, that's just where it's at right now. And I think, you know, if you're a fan, you just hope that they can get that wrapped up, and that, you know, in the next few weeks, they can do something that they haven't done for you in the past forever years. It seems like
it's kind of insane that you could imagine a situation where they win on Sunday and they do this whole trophy presentation and everybody's feeling good about themselves. But most Maryland fans are kind of shrugging their shoulders, right? Like, okay, yeah. we won a piece of it with four other teams. Woo, right? I mean, it's
a little bit bittersweet for sure.
It's so strange. It feels a little bit like the Sweet 16 in 14-15, right? Because that team was so hyped coming out the gate, and then they didn't play all that great, and then they beat a 12 seed and a 13 seed. And yes, it's your first Sweet 16 since 2003. Like, you feel good about that, but at the same time, it's like, okay.
Yeah, well, no, most
you
people
go and lose to Kansas and then whatever, right?
Exactly. And that's the only Sweet 16 in the past 17 years. I mean, how crazy is that? So, you know, we talked about it before, but, you know, and you mentioned this, the big thing, that one of the things that also hurts Turgeon, I think, is that Gary's last 7 years, he didn't go to a Sweet 16 either. So the impatience had already grown in the fan base. And like I said to you, maybe, who knows? Maybe if Gary had gone to made a bunch of deep runs, it'd be worse. His expectations would be higher, but I don't think so. I think people were just so anxious to get back on track. They'd gotten so accustomed to getting multiple wins in the postseason in the tournament every year. And then you missed the tournament the first 4 years, and you got the one kind of not that satisfying Sweet 16. Now this year, you finally, you know, it looks like the breakthrough. You're going to win what everybody has raved about as the best conference in the country, which is a big breakthrough. And then all of a sudden that kind of flies out the window to some extent. And so, no, I think moving forward now, it's just an inordinate amount of this season's legacy, or how this season is judged, is just going to come down to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. It's so wild. I mean,
winning the conference.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. And, you know, like I said, it can be a good thing to hang a banner, but it doesn't solve the problem. You know, there was a stat posted on the InsideMarylandSports.com message boards the other day that Mark Turgeon's teams have won exactly 3 basketball games in the month of March in the past 4 years. 2 of those, which were regular season games. Anthony Cowan has never won a Big Ten tournament game in his entire career. They have one win in the NCAA tournament over Belmont.
Incredible.
It's just amazing when you look at how well they've done for the most part. You know, like you said, Turgeon has run off a number of these second or thirds in the Big Ten three out of the last 5 years, I think, right? So the regular season success has been there, but they just fall apart every time when it gets to February and March. And it's just so frustrating as a fan. It kind of comes down to the way that SVP was talking. You know, you guys need to enjoy the moments. Well, you should. Please. I enjoyed the moments, but man, there's always just this dark place in the back of my head thinking, okay, you know, it's great beating some teams with numbers next to their names in January or even February. Like, that's fun. That's great. That's a thing you should enjoy. But if you can't do it in March, then what the hell are we even here for?
Yeah, that's it right there. If you're a college basketball fan or a Maryland fan, it's all about March. You know, NFL, obviously you want to win the playoffs, but people are just glued to every game in the regular season. Every game matters. College basketball, it's just so heavily slanted toward the NCAA tournament that, you know, even if you get those solid seasons, which, you know, he's a good coach, he's had solid seasons, he's been ranked often. But if you don't have that hope for March, then it feels like, you know, I'm investing a lot of time into this, and no matter how well the regular season goes, once March comes around, I still don't have that hope of that magical run, because everybody wants that magical tournament run, whether it's as a Cinderella or whether you have a season like Maryland's had and you get a high seed and you live up to it and go to, like, at least the Elite Eight. You know, you want to go into the tournament hyped up, looking for your team to have a run. So I think that the lack of that happening in Gary's final 7 years and then on to Turgeon's 8 previous years before this year has kind of killed people's hope when March comes around, and they're a lot more trigger happy and a lot quicker to say the sky's falling just because of everything that's happened, which is why they're reacting to this slump, which is, you know, three losses in 4 games and a really tough spot in the schedule, probably the toughest spot all year, as if it were like a 7 game losing streak. It's just the psychology of it, which is understandable.
Yeah. And, you know, we did, like I said, Maryland had lost, you know, like 4 or 6 games, I think, in January. We had done our podcast here where, you know, we were about to bury the guy. I mean, it looked like the season was falling apart. So, you know, you call him how you see him, right? It looked like this was going to be the same thing over and over again. And then they pull off that 9-game winning streak, which we clearly deserve credit for, right? I mean,
yeah, we saved the season with that podcast.
Absolutely. I mean,
immediately after that is when they got it together.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only thing that motivates the team is spiting us, apparently, which I'm perfectly fine with. So maybe we just need to do a full hour here about how Maryland's never going to win a tournament game ever again. And maybe that will inspire them to go to a Final Four. I don't know. But, I mean, we crushed them. And there are a couple guys on Twitter who are kind of like, after each win, kind of come back and be like, yeah, Paul, nice episode. And, you know, like that scene from the movie Charlie Wilson's War, I just kind of would always say, well, you know, and the Zen master said, we'll see. Right. Yeah. So here we are again. And it just feels like history is repeating itself. And I just don't know. I mean, you get the pundit types. And I feel like the Billises and the, you know, the Greenbergs and Seth Davis, even all those guys that, like, they're never just going to, like, they're never going to crush a guy like that's in the field. Like, they just don't do that. And you've heard them say, oh, I still like Maryland. I think Maryland's fine. There is nobody who has watched this in the past few years, the way that Maryland always falls apart, who's going to pick Maryland to make a run in March. It just doesn't, it would defy all logic. It'll be like girls who pick teams based on, like, the mascots who will have Maryland in the Final Four. And
unless you're into the do theory of them being due to do it.
Yeah. Hey, by all means. I mean,
like a hitter in a slump, like Chris Davis, you know, he's due to hit a home run after that 0-for-50 or whatever start to last year.
Well, how many other teams have made fluke runs in the NCAA tournament? I mean, it's like Maryland is banned from even doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the crazy thing. We talked about that list posted on the site of all the schools that have made Sweet 16s in the time since Maryland made its one before that last one that you mentioned. And it's, like you said, it's like 70 deep, like just random schools left and right. A lot of football schools have done it 3 or 4 times, stuff like that. So, you know, it's understandable that why, you know, they've had a really good season. This is, I think, his best team. So it's kind of ironic or funny that, you know, there's probably more panic and more negativity toward him at the end of maybe his best season that he's had. And that's because people are so fragile at this point from not having things go right in March. So I think that they, you know, will get more into it when the tournament comes around. But I still think that they're a team that definitely has the capability to make a run, whether that's Elite Eight or what, you know. I think they have that in them, but you just don't know. The 3-point shooting is so bad. You know, are they going to get their defense back? I think, again, that's a fatigue thing more than anything, but You know, Cowan can be inconsistent from game to game, but he's the kind of guy who I feel like clearly has that desperate senior, you know, not wanting to let his team go down kind of thing, like Carson Edwards in the tournament did. So I could see him having one of those runs, but yeah, I mean, it's just, there's no way for people to have ultimate faith, and people will still pick them in their bracket because that's just what you do, right? You pick your team. So yeah, it'll be interesting for them, you know, hopefully for the fans, they get to stay in the East. I think that would help them a lot. I talked to Patrick Stevens and posted an article. Basically, his theory is that they need to, it would be better for them maybe to be the highest three instead of the lowest two, or the highest four instead of the lowest three, because then they'll be more likely to be in the East and say like Spokane, Washington, or wherever the hell the West is. So it's an interesting week ahead. You know, I feel like they should beat Michigan again. That's a good setup for them. And then we got the Big Ten tournament next Thursday.
It feels to me like all year it's kind of felt like this. If you want the positive case for Maryland right now, it's as simple as this. This has always felt like the Mello Trimble freshman year team with, you know, Cowan at least on that level or close to that level at his best, and Jalen Smith just being better than any of those other dudes who were on that team. And at positions where you can basically run a two-man game on offense, can win you a lot of games. And this team has the ability to play defense on a level that should be able to play against just about anybody. That's the positive. Those things can't go away.
Probably his most athletic team. You don't have that Des Wells crazy freak athlete, but across the board, you know, guys like Wiggins and Morsell, Dante Scott, obviously Sticks. So this is his most athletic team. I think, you know, going 60 has hurt them a little bit at times. In the NCAA tournament, though, you know, you get those two games. If you 2 games in 3 days, you win, you go back home for 4 days before the Sweet 16. So, you know, obviously barring foul trouble or injuries, that's a given. But, you know, I still feel like this is his best team, best equipped for the postseason team that he's had. But, you know, again, it's all, everything's going to come down to how they do in March because of what we discussed. You know, the banner would be nice. The banner is going to be a little bit bittersweet just because they had a chance for the outright. But, you know.
Here, let me put it to you this way. I think the program benefits from the banner. I don't think Turge gets much credit for it. Like, whether that's I feel like he's going to be solely judged on what happens in the tournament. Both tournaments, probably.
He'll get credit for it if he makes a run in the NCAAs. Then it'll change how people look at that, because it won't be the biggest accomplishment of the season. You know, that won't be the high point. So then it'll be something to celebrate more. But yeah, it's just really a unique situation to see a coach having his best year in like a decade span at the school, but also in a situation where he's really desperately needs to do something in the postseason.
Man, this is just such a weird situation. Just, you know, I maybe everybody else in college basketball is looking at us like we're crazy. I don't know. Maybe you have to live it. Maybe, you know, somebody far away or 20 years from now is looking back at this being like, that looked like a great time to be at Maryland, you know?
People who don't follow Maryland as closely, you know, I do these radio interviews with guys who follow the program but aren't, you know, they're not Maryland people, and they'll ask me a lot of, well, why are the fans so against Turgeon? Seems to me he's done a really good job and blah, blah, blah. And I have to explain, it's the postseason, that's it, you know, they haven't made a run. People want to do something more. They're tired of being done in the first week or one and done at the Big Ten tournament. So he's been a solid coach, you know, and they've been ranked consistently and all that stuff, but you know, there's just been nothing in March.
You just want to be able to dream in March, man. I mean, so much of college basketball is you just want to be able to dream. And it just feels like every Maryland fan just sees that bracket and it's like, okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, even on like our site Facebook page, so many of the comments are one and this team's going to be one and done. I don't think this is not a one and done team to me. I mean, anything's possible. They're not playing well lately. I don't think anything about this team to me says one and done, but it's just the negativity is ingrained at this point.
Well, I can tell you one thing that's done. It's hoping that Maryland three-point shots are going to ever fall through the cylinder, because they are not. It's bad, Jeff. It's bad. It was bad to start. It got a little bit better, and now it's really bad again. And yeah. And that's a real shame, because you take all of the ingredients of this program, of this season, this group of kids, and you just get them shooting 35, 36, maybe 37% from three-point land, and they're probably, you know, a three-loss team running away with the conference, and we're having a totally different discussion.
Yeah, if they're even average or slightly above average from three, they're an elite team with their defense and with their top two guys that they have. They're one of the best teams in the country, clearly, but it just hasn't happened. There's no explanation for it. You know, with Cowan, you've known all his career, he's been inconsistent. Nothing about him not shooting, you know, great from three is surprising. But it all comes down to Ayala and Wiggins, or a lot of it anyways, comes down to those guys. They shot really well last year as freshmen, and they just have not, and so many of the shots are wide open. And there's a reason, you know, like we said, there's a reason for that. If you're that wide open, they're probably giving it to you for a reason. But, you know, they showed last year they can shoot, and both guys are missing so many. They're missing so many wide open shots. But, you know, I do feel like I could see, this is the kind of team that I could see them getting into the tournament, and a guy like Wiggins gets hot, or Cowan again gets hot. But you're definitely not going to bet on it. I mean, it's just game after game, brick after. I mean, they started 1 for 15 from three the other night, finished 6 of 32. And, you know, I'll tweet during the games a lot, and I feel like I have tweeted so many times this season, Maryland is off to a 1 for 9 start. Maryland's 1 for 10 from three. Maryland's 2 for 13. It's like so consistent. And
really, you know what? We talked about reasons why the defense has struggled recently. I kind of feel like the three-point shooting has something to do with that. Like, it's such an emotional thing. You know, everybody gets so excited when you hit a three, and you get so bummed when you see that third or fourth or fifth one clank off the rim. Like, you kind of wonder if that gets in the psychology a little bit, and it's just and you're just sitting there thinking, like, man, we just can't get any of these to fall, and you get tired of running through that fifth screen on next position. Possession.
Yeah, Turgeon has said exactly that. He said after the Rutgers game that, you know, all year long they haven't been a good three-point shooting team, but they've been good at, you know, getting back on defense regardless, and that they guys are starting to hang their heads after missing threes and not getting back. So that's definitely part of the defensive issues.
All right. Well, there's not much more to break down, frankly. They just kind of are what they are at this point of the season. The one thing that has happened that's been a positive for them is getting a double bye guaranteed no matter what happens on Sunday in the Big Ten tournament. So they won't play until Friday. That's kind of a gift and a curse in a way. Now, they're not a bubble team that's like sitting here hoping for another, low level team that they can beat to kind of improve their seed or get them in the tournament. But they're going to play a good squad basically no matter what. In that first game on Friday. And again, you know, you're talking about a lot of pressure on a team that's been struggling and, you know, probably doesn't want to go into the NCAA tournament on a bit of a losing streak.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be nice to have the extra rest for them. I think, you know, I'm big on teams in desperate situations. It doesn't always work out. I mean, you know, teams lose on senior night to inferior teams sometimes, and that's, nobody wants to win more than on senior day, so it's not a science. But I feel like they so desperately, especially Cowan, want to get over this hump of not winning any games in the Big Ten tournament that I don't see them going one and done. Obviously, the matchup, who knows? That sounds crazy to say with the way they've been playing and how tough the conference is. They are going to play somebody good in that round, but I don't think that they're, I think whoever it is, I'm going to sound like a homer, but I don't feel like they'll be one and done. But you know, at this point, who knows?
Well, if you're talking about a regular season ending that doesn't include this kind of demoralizing streak, like we've talked about this, the Big Ten tournament's not that big a deal in any other scenario, except when you have a coach who kind of needs to sell himself a little bit, right, in a tournament scenario. So, like, you know, winning the first game and losing the semifinal is fine. Like, that's not a thing that's going to make you feel bad. At this point, though, especially if they lose against Michigan, you go and you lose to an Illinois or, you know, I don't know who's going to be on the other side of that thing. You know, I don't know, a Rutgers State. Even Ohio State, right? Yeah. Whoever it is going to be a good team. But if you lose that game too, like, you're just going to be, you're probably on the 4 or 5 line at that point. And that's not a place you want to be going against what's probably going to be a really good mid-major in your first game in the tournament on a kind of a big losing streak with a miracle thrown in between. Like, that's just not how you want it to go.
In the wrong direction at the wrong time.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like the over-under for this team right now is like reaching the Big Ten finals and Sweet 16. Maybe that sounds too ambitious. Maybe I'm higher on them than some people are, but clearly they're good enough to do it. You know, we've seen it, and I don't know. It's so hard to say with how they've played lately and with how they've struggled in March. You can just never bet on them in March. I hate to say it. And then again, that's why, you know, Turgeon's got his contract situation. Damon Evans, you know, he understands that fans are impatient and that, you know, that's going to be a really, not to get into a whole other can of worms, but that's going to be a really interesting scenario, especially if you win the Big Ten title. You know, normally that's an auto extension, but it, you know, is it, or does it all rest on what they do in the postseason?
Ask Ralph Friedgen, ACC Coach of the Year in 2010.
Yeah, but that was a new athletic director, you know, coming in trying to make his mark, hire his own guy. Obviously, Evans did not hire Turgeon, so it's not his guy, but he has been around for a while. True. So it's not like a coming in and shaking things up kind of
right.
situation.
Yeah, if anything, he does not want things shaken up.
You don't want Kevin Anderson shaking up anything.
No.
Probably not even like a protein shake.
He's never done that.
I'm not even going to touch that one.
Yeah, we'll move on from that. I will say I had started a thread on the InsideMarylandSports.com message boards a few weeks back, putting the over-under on Maryland postseason wins at 3.5. Yep. I believe you would have had them at 4 there, so that would have just barely cleared it.
3.5 is really good. It's between 3.5 and 4.5. People on the site who, you know, mostly are just battered at this point probably think that's crazy. They probably say it's 2. I see a lot of people saying 1 and done in both tournaments, stuff like that. But to me, this feels like a go to the conference finals and Sweet 16, maybe breakthrough to Elite 8 kind of team. If you don't bare minimum Sweet 16 and win at least one game in the conference tournament, to me, that's an enormous disappointment.
Right. I think if you're looking at a 24-7 team or a 23-8 team that's been in the top 10 most of the year and will either share the Big Ten, the title for the toughest conference in college basketball, you've got to think you can't, you know, if it was just any team in the world, just you look at that team based on the season they've had, you can't say that season is a success or the benchmark for the postseason should be any less than a Sweet 16 and a semifinal or final in the conference tournament. Like, that's just where you would expect that level of team to kind of even off at if you ran like 100 or 1,000 simulations. So
yeah,
I think
what
that's
you'd expect that team to do. And also, you know, again, this is supposed to be your best team. You know, it's a sliding scale because you haven't gone. If you had made these deep runs in previous years, then maybe it might not be so specific what you need to do. But since it's all kind of built into this moment where you're supposed, you know, it's your best team, you're supposed to have your best chance of doing it, that obviously factors in heavily.
Yes. Fair or not, the expectations for a Turgeon-led team with this resume and this season is going to be significantly higher than anybody else's team. And that's high level college basketball for a guy who makes, you know, $3.2 million a year. Like, it is what it is. Right. So
that's right.
I'm sure we will be talking more about that next week as we lead into the Big Ten tournament. As for now, Michigan at home on Sunday for at least some of the marbles. And certainly from a psychological perspective, it's just a game that Maryland has to win if they want to have any interest in doing some in the postseason. So let's move on to sunnier topics like football. Ahmed Ghafir, are you still with us, or have you uh, You faded away into like a Chipotle fueled nap or something.
I'm still here, man.
All right. All right. You got some good news for us? Or are we still waiting? What's that?
I said that's a true workmanlike effort to still be hanging in after listening to us ramble.
That's right.
Yeah, it's officially the end of the dead period, so things are definitely picking up for Maryland. We reported on the site a couple of guys made their way through campus this week. Archbishop Spalding, three-star athlete, Zaki Wheatley, he tweeted that he was going to be there. We reported that on Monday. So this weekend, we have a list of about 16 guys that are expected to make their way through. That includes Team Tampa as well, as we mentioned before. They'll be in the area for a 7-on-7 tournament, so there's going to be a lot of Florida talent that will be making their way in and out of campus. So right now, I would say Maryland's did a good job of getting a lot of their top targets on campus this weekend. Look for Loxie to kind of continue to build on their positive momentum.
Do we have anybody on relative commitment watch, or are we just kind of, you know, reestablishing contact, hoping to get some guys in here as spring practice gets going on?
Yeah, I mean, right now, you know, I know everyone kind of had thought there were rumors that Caleb Williams could be deciding soon. Damian Robinson, he could be deciding soon. But those guys, they're going to take their time, going to take more visits and whatnot. So right now, I'm not expecting a lot of guys. There are some out-of-state guys and maybe newer targets that are making their way to campus for the first time. Some of these guys are doing a two-day visit, like an overnight visit on Saturday night. So I would say that it would be it's a weekend where I think we could see a lot more movement or traction with out-of-state targets. But in terms of commitments, I'm not expecting that right now.
All right. We did get a commitment from a three-star tight end over the break. Tell us a little more about him. Yeah. I would tell you his name, but I forgot it.
Archbishop Carroll, three-star tight end, Leron Husbands. Went out to Carroll a couple weeks ago, Husband's been the top tight end target for tight end coach Mike Miller. He runs a 4.6. He has a really good big frame at 6.4 and has very long arms. I would say, right as a junior, he kind of flashes more of a receiver than a tight end, but I'd say that with strength and conditioning, and I would say even in his senior year, I expect to see him lined up more at tight end, but big physical guy, has good soft hands, so I think he's a guy, especially with Maryland. Chigozie Mokonkwo going into his junior year, Maryland kind of needs their next receiving tight end to kind of step up. So feels a big need, especially after not getting a tight end in the 20 class, getting their top target and especially a local guy. That's a big need for the staff.
All right, speaking of the staff, Corey Robinson got himself a little bit of a promotion. Announced that he would be leaving for the New Orleans Saints for an on-field position. So that sucks, but I guess I can't really blame the guy necessarily. That's a pretty good gig.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on the surface, you know, you see Corey Robinson leaving the program, and it's, I would say, a little bit, you know, definitely turned some heads because he and head coach Mike Loxley, they have a close relationship dating back years. Loxley played a big role in getting Corey Robinson onto the staff back in 2015. So those two definitely have been connected over the years. But obviously getting a promotion available to you, presented to you to go to the NFL and more or less the Saints, I think that's it's obvious as to why he took it. So I definitely look for Maryland to, especially at cornerback. They definitely need a recruiter, a guy with a proven pedigree. So we posted a couple names on the site, guys that maybe could fit that profile, and maybe the guys that, you know, Azar Abdul-Rahim, you know, he's a former Maryland assistant, has plenty of recruiting ties, and he was already brought up. So we'll see.
That's the move right there.
You think?
That's the move. That's the obvious home run if they.
That's the baller move. He's a defensive coordinator right now, isn't he?
No, he's a defensive backs coach at BC now.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd be happy to come home if he could. In fact, I know he would. So,
him and Locks have a little bit of a thing?
Yeah, I think they, from what I've heard, I think that they've kind of patched it up. Who knows how much, if they have. I don't see, not sorry to interrupt him, Ed, but I don't see how you don't make him the guy. I mean, he's such a good recruiter locally. He was there he was their top recruiter 2 years in a row. I think he was what was he that 1 year? Number five in the Big Ten or something like that, which doesn't sound like much, but then you look at the list and it's Ohio State, Michigan, and then Maryland, Azar Abdul-Rahim.
I mean, he was responsible for all the dudes. Like,
yeah,
all of them.
I mean, him and Beatty pretty much split up everyone.
Yeah, so that would be good. Do we have any intel on that, or are we just kind of throwing out the obvious name?
I don't think there's been any contact yet, as far as I know, but, you know, it could be kept quiet. I would think we'll know first, maybe, if it happens, but I don't think, as of right now, I don't know what the chances are.
Okay. Well, that would certainly be good. That would make me feel a little bit better about that scenario. Certainly, it didn't look like this is, you know, someone who was told to move on. So, wishing the best of luck, Corey. Corey certainly did his part here as a recruiter, and I know kind of helping rehabilitate the Merrill name in, around locally. So good for him. All right, so we will be back next week, unless Jeff and I catch the coronavirus or something like that. We have Big Ten tournament starting late next week. Hopefully, Maron get it done on Sunday. It will be a little less dour about things, but if they don't, then bring your morning clothes. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are all over the Inside MarylandSports.com message boards. We are IMS Radio. And we are out.